Welcome to System Mastery, our, Jesus Christ, almost 10-year mission to explore strange old bullshit, to seek out dead horses and dead civilizations and beat them 1d6 damage at a time, to boldly go where only a few people have gone before, the discount bin of your local RPG sellers. It's Star Munchkin, today on System Mastery. Everyone, welcome back to System Mastery. I am your host, John.
Ouch. I'm over here to do you a favor.
It has come to pass.
John's just crowing because we're at his house, and I'm letting him have the victory because the only reason we're at his house is because someone made a crash sandwich out of the back of his car.
Yeah, so my parked car, which someone managed to just knock the corner of it off.
Yeah, they just took a huge chunk of car off your car, and now you can see the inner car inside your car.
Yeah.
It's all full of car.
There's a whole bunch of car in that car. Has exhibit been by?
So you can drive while you drive. But so I drove over to John's house. Normally, the reason we record at my house most of the time is because traffic flows much more efficiently that way.
Yeah, the traffic is normally flowing against coming to this place.
Yes. Also, it's usually hot here, and you can either have the air conditioning on and it fucks up the sound, or you can sweat and die.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I came over here to do it, and this is the thanks I get. John steals my show.
That's right. It's my show now.
That's fair.
My house, my show, my rules.
Is that how this has been working? I'm going to take over all the movie masteries. I don't want to, but I guess if I have to.
Wait a minute. That's more work. No. Yeah. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, hey. How you doing, Jeff?
Well, no one made the back of my car into a car accordion, so I'm feeling much better than you, probably.
Probably.
Things are going fine. I am excited to be here to talk about a game. This is like the last of my stock of emergency short games, because we had a couple major things happening. We had a big contribution to Jeff Stormer's Miracle Monday superhero AP event.
Yeah.
That we needed some time to record some stuff for, along with the fine folks at Character Creation Cast. And then also, we just finished the first half of our fifth book project.
Yes, indeed. And so that we've been busy.
Yeah, that's been eating up all of our spare time, writing books. Because I'm guessing most of you have not written books for like a publisher. They don't give you any time. We're not famous, so it's not, we can't just George R. R. Martin about it and be like, no, I feel like making video games and being on TV for 30 years instead of finishing a book.
Yeah, no, we don't get to go, I'll be writing a novel in my own time, thank you. They're like, hey, here's a project. You got a month, otherwise we'll murder you.
You have 26 days or we take the money away and we break your thumbs.
So yeah, that's been going on. It's good. It's great. Love to see it happen. I
do have one bit of good news.
Good.
It took me about 48 hours to potty train Sage.
Nice.
It was great. I was just like, hey, you want to use the potty? And she was like, yes. And then she did. And it was great. And since then, I haven't had to change a diaper on her in a week.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey. Nice. So,
good on her. I'm very proud of my daughter.
I'm very proud of your daughter as well.
And I'm not just filling time because we read a 60-page OGL book.
No, because honestly, there is so much trash in this. I mean, just to start with, it is Star Munchkin, so an OGL game based on the Star Munchkin card game.
Yeah, the spin-off or addition to the regular Munchkin card game.
Yes.
Which I'm sure you're all very familiar with.
Yeah, the Munchkin game, which has a billion different versions of it, none of them good.
It's not the best. I mean, it's not the worst game ever. It's not my favorite. Neither of us particularly enjoy it.
No, yeah. I mean,
it's not like it's Exploding Kittens bad.
Yeah, there are at least, you know, some rules to it, and it's not just complicated rock, paper, scissor, but it's still a game that takes way too long and outlives its welcome.
Yes.
Every time.
Exactly. The problem with Munchkin, I mean, as long as we might as well start with our
oh, yeah. I mean, let's just start at, we've both played it. Now, I owned a bunch of Munchkins, including the Star Munchkin game, so I know a bunch of the crap in this.
I owned Star Munchkin and Superhero Munchkin and had them smooshed together, and that was my Munchkin experience.
Yeah, I owned those. I had Munchkin Foo.
Yeah, I also had the very, very original Munchkin, which is my usual go-to story about it, is that I had the version of Munchkin that was so old that it still had that line in the instructions about how the only reason you can't cheat is if you get caught, which made the games even worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone thought that meant you can cheat if you're good at it.
And the problem is, boy, did they put that exactly into this book as well.
Yeah.
And, like, they had to change that rule in later printings of Munchkin, and you'd think they would learn not to fucking do that.
Yeah. I mean, like John was saying, Munchkin always outlives its welcome because it is a stop anyone from winning game. That's the point. Like, you don't care what's going on until someone's level 9, and then the entire game is just, oh, everyone sit on all your cards that stop anyone from gaining a level, and we'll just wait until we see who runs out of cards or who gets bored enough to king make.
Oh, yeah. Because it always ends up being, you know, if you're playing 4 people, 2 people are at level 9, someone's at level 6 and for some reason still thinks they might win, and someone has never gotten anything, is sitting at level 2, and they're like, oh, fuck it, I hate this game, and will eventually kingmake someone to end it.
That someone is always me, because I love that the rogue just costs you a level to steal stuff, which means you can just do it and stay at level 1 forever, and just steal everyone's everything. That's all I want to do in Munchkin, is just slow the game down even more. To teach people, it's an object lesson.
A valuable lesson.
In not playing Munchkin. The last time we did a Steve Jackson game, and we weren't nice to it, was Car Wars, 9 years ago now, and we actually had a Steve Jackson Games employee skate through our comment section to yell at us for not understanding or getting it. And I get that, because Car Wars was not a role-playing game. That was a real mistake that you and I made. But I'm really hoping we get someone who comes after for Munchkin, because why bother? It's, even if both of us hate it.
The problem is... Star Munchkin, Munchkin, all those RPGs that they made off of this, and anything like that, is, it's almost like that Penny Arcade, this isn't for critics thing, is if I go like, hey, this game sucks and it would be terrible to play because there's no balance, they're like, well, of course there isn't, that's the point, it's ironic, it's not for you, and I'm like, great, you're not allowed to say that this game sucks because it's supposed to suck.
I was more worried, or more interested in seeing if people would come through to defend Munchkin, just in general, as if it needs it, because, you know, as much as we both kind of agree that it's not great, it certainly is 40% of any given game store forever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always going to be some section that's like, all right, what current brand gave Munchkin their thing? What is it, Stranger Things Munchkin? Sure, why not?
Why not? Oh, Munchkin Monopoly Munchkin, which is Munchkin based on Monopoly based on Munchkin?
Yeah, we took the Munchkin game, made a Monopoly of it, then we took that Monopoly game and we made Munchkin Monopoly Munchkin, and then we made the board game of Monopoly Munchkin Monopoly Munchkin Munchkin Monopoly.
But we worked in some Warhammer 40K when we were doing it, so it's Warhammer 40K Munchkin Monopoly Munchkin Monopoly Munchkin, which is... It's quite interesting. It's got a lot of +3 chainsaws of ultimate chainsawitude.
Oh, it's got a card that says, I chainsaw what you did.
Does it have the exact same lumpy little John Kovalik drawings as every other one of these ever has? Yes.
Obviously.
As much as I actually don't mind John Kovalik's art, I think it's fine. It's utilitarian in a lumpy, silly way. You eventually start to notice that he has one gimmick, which is to draw all of his men as bald little booger men, and all of his women as 6 feet taller and hot as hell.
Yeah.
Even though they're still, like, just... you know, sketch drawings, you can tell he's like, well, dudes in the real world are basically tiny Shreks, and women are statuesque hot ladies.
That's it. That's what I got. So because this is OGL.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and get out of the way the whole, hey, if you haven't listened to any of our OGL things or our D&D 3rd edition one, you can do that. Mm-hmm. We're not going to spend a ton of time talking about the base idea behind Dungeons & Dragons open game license.
Rather than doing that, I think it's fun to note that this book, far more than any other OGL book we've done so far, is embarrassed about it.
Oh, yeah.
It is deeply, personally embarrassed to have to use the Distinguished Competitions rule system to get their game into stores. You know how every OGL book has to have that little section at the back, like the SRD, basic information about OGL? in this book, they mirror printed it, so it's impossible to read. Like, if you look at the back page of the book, you'll see that the usual boilerplate, this is an OGL game, is printed mirror backwards. They did their best to be like, no, this is an original game. Like, they tried to add a new stat to the sixth page. It's a joke, but...
Yeah, they have a bunch of joke stuff, but they also have joke things for, like, the beginning of every section. We'll say, like, several of these things are open, but this one is closed.
Yes. I didn't even know what those were at first until I was like, oh, right, it's the Open Gaming License. That's what OGL stands for. That's what they're joking about.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you can use these four charts in your game because it's open, but this one chart is closed. Don't use it.
So yeah, it's funny that it seems just dismally unhappy that it has to admit that it technically... Like, this book's even going out of its way to be like, you do not need to buy any player's handbook made by any other company to play this. We made sure it has everything you need. And then, like, in parentheses, you know, please do buy the Dungeons & Dragons player's handbook. That is one of the agreements we made in order to be able to use an OGL game.
Which, I'll say, probably when they're making fun of... like OGL or very specific things, It works slightly better. But man, when they just sort of buckshot whatever they can do against a wall and hope something sticks for jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. I forget the first name of the author of this. It was something, Jeff Mangrum, was it?
John Mangrum.
John Mangrum. John Mangrum, who wrote a number of role-playing games for Steve Jackson Games.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell he definitely wasn't picked because he had a lot of, like, Star Trek and Star Wars jokes he wanted to work through. He just had sort of a generic scattershot humor style that Munchkin likes.
Yeah, there's... One of the things in this that I was like, man, that's weird, is they don't have a lot of the same jokes from the card game in here. And again, not as much of the, like, Star Trek, Star Wars, all the sci-fi jokes that you would expect to be in here. And it's just sort of like generic science fiction type jokes.
There's some generic sci-fi jokes. There's also just the thing that always drives me most nuts about Steve Jackson kind of meta style games, or, you know, Munchkin and a couple of the other ones, Toon is another one, is the generic nerd jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're like, oh, if you give the DM pizza, then he might be distracted long enough for you to steal a peek at his hot girlfriend, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there's an entire ability in this, which is like, if you offer the DM food and he accepts, you get a +1 to all your to-hit rolls.
I mean, I'm going to be honest, that little chunk, that power structure in this game that's nothing but meta stuff that just messes with the table is easily the best thing in here, and it's a real shame that it's limited to one...
Oh, no, anyone can have it.
Oh, no, anyone can have it, but one class is really good at it.
Yes.
And it's interesting. It's probably the most interesting part of the game.
Yes.
And that's what the Star Wars joke of the farce...
Yeah, there's a bunch of, you know, because they have their own set of feats, there's a bunch of farce ones, and there's
Cybornetics.
Those are the only ones, though, that let you affect outside of the game stuff,
yeah, which
is interesting.
They affect the table as opposed to the game, which is kind of a neat concept, and it's the sort of thing where I see that concept and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I like the idea of a role-playing game that reaches up from the table and messes with the players. I've been talking about writing one of those for years. But if I were to do so, it would be the game. That idea would become...
Oh, which I just lost?
I'm sorry, did you just look at my hands?
Oh, no, the game.
That would be the core concept of the game is, you know, this kind of meta table character interaction stuff, as opposed to just one of the small elements on the side of it.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, you
know the stats.
You get your stats. The ad... Stat X, which is basically you have 7 stats instead of 6, but
yeah,
you just put your worst one in that because it never gets mentioned again.
Yes, that's the whole point, is that Stat X is not a real stat. It's a hilarious joke that they're like, no one knows what this stat means or represents.
Oh, if you wanted to combine this, because there's a lot of, if you wanted to combine this with the Munchkin role-playing game, which was already out, don't worry. Stat X was already there. It was there the whole time.
Yeah, but we'll never mention it again. And indeed they do not. It is not a real stat. It's just a fun joke about how this isn't the OGL. They made a change.
Yeah, and of course this is also in the stat section the first time where they get into the dumb cheating thing where they're like, oh, you can do a point buy if you look in our Munchkin game or the Munchkin, like, master sheet, because the GM is the Munchkin master.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, oh, you can also do the honor system role-playing for your character where you roll 46 and drop low 7 times, and then you can do it as many times as you want as long as no one catches you, and then you can show up and have everything be a 16 or higher. I'm like, don't do that.
Don't say that. Don't suggest that. People will take those suggestions seriously. We had the same thing come up in the last, or a similar thing come up in the last episode, where there was that bit about if your player wants to combine two factions that we don't recommend they combine, they better give you a real good story for why they should be able to, and you need to approve that story. And I was like, that's just unnecessary. Just let them do it and accept their good story. Ah. It's not your job to be all Jordan Petersoning on your fucking friends and be like, I disapprove of that story. Also, I'm the world's ugliest man.
I want to say something about Munchkin again. God, I'm just harping on Munchkin.
I was really worried you were about to fight me on Jordan Peterson.
No, Jesus Christ. Why would I ever fight you on Jordan Peterson? No, I want to say something about Munchkin that I feel a lot of people will be angry about, the whole, like, you know, this is super imbalanced, it takes too long, and for the RPGs, the, like, obviously there's no balance here, you know, it's just, you know, some wacky garbage. And that's not even the main issue I have. It's so weird to me that this is a joke of a way of playing a game that I don't think I've ever seen anyone play or have even heard anyone play, of the whole, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna play this game and, you know, yeah, you'll murder Hobo, but the idea that you're like, oh, and then I kill my friend and take all of his stuff too.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, this does open with that the three rules of Munchkin gaming or whatever. Which,
yeah, the
is like,
three rules of Munchkinism or whatever.
Yeah, and they're all aimed at, like, oh, kill a, take his whatever's not nailed down, and if your friends are in the way, kill them and take their stuff too. That's just all in good fun. And if they try to kill you, kill them first. Those are the rules of Munchkinning. And you're like, no one's ever done that.
No.
It makes sense in the board game format, where you're not as attached to your characters and you didn't spend a lot of time making them.
Oh, no. And that's, you know, a competitive card game. So you're like, yeah, it makes sense to do that.
Yeah.
But even then, it's supposed to be a parody of, oh, well, this is how D&D Munchkins play. And I'm like, no, even the most Munchkin-y player is still like, yeah, I'm not going to fucking murder my cleric just to so I can get something from them that I don't need.
Have you never run into that? I've run into that at least once or twice.
Oh, I've run into players that are like, oh, I'll steal from the other PCs, but they are very quickly told to cut that shit out.
I had a game I played in once where one of the players had done the whole, like, I'm not going to tell everybody my real alignment. My real alignment is neutral evil, and I'm not telling anyone. And then, you know, he was like, okay, this night when everyone goes to sleep, I wake up and kill them. And the DM was like, no. And he kept insisting. He was like, no, it fits my character. I never told them I was secretly evil. And finally the DM was like, great, well, while you're bumbling around trying to kill them, they wake up. So, but that was the one time I've ever seen that, was someone who was like desperately convinced that was the way to play the game, was to just, you know, be like, hey, everybody, I'm chaotic good. Don't ask any questions. I'll murder you later. And you're like, don't. Why would you waste everybody's time like this?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, that's definitely a thing here where it's got that kind of Munchkin card game philosophy being imported to the role-playing game, when really that's one of the more fundamental changes you need to modify if you're trying to come up with a longer form version of the Munchkin experience. And good Lord, why would you want that?
Yeah. I mean, especially because in this, when you're creating a character and you're doing all this, the game also treats it as like, your character's probably going to die and nothing really matters about it. So, whatever, just make a character and run in there and, you know, kill some monsters and get some loot, and then maybe you'll die and you'll come back as the same character, and who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, ultimately, the problem with this game is that the same problem we're going to run into with a lot of games we reviewed before, which are comedy games, which means most of the jokes are right there in the book. So rather than trying to play it and creating new jokes, you're really just better off reading it, seeing if the humor tracks, and then returning it quietly to your shelf.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get through it, you're like, oh, none of this is landing. Farce Kniggets? No, I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah. I mean, that we may as well get into the options for player stuff. So you've got your Your species selection, so you can be human, which is exactly a human from OGL.
It's OGL humans. You get the extra feet. You get the 4 extra skill points.
Yep. You get your skill points, you get your feats, you take them all,
then you have yeah, so,
regular human.
And then there's a whole section in there that describes them, how they're the most adaptable species, and they're quick to take over places and so on. No one ever comes up with anything new and interesting to say about humans.
No, because they're humans. Yeah. Who gives a shit?
Then you've got the next one in line, I believe, is the felines.
You get the bugs.
The bugs. The bugs, which are any number of insect species. This game does something I've always I've appreciated this in various sci-fi games, is rather than coming up with species, they just come up with genres of space things you will encounter.
Oh, yeah.
So bugs is just like, it covers any insectoid species. You could play as the aliens from Alien if you want.
Yeah, you can have extra arms or extra legs.
You could be huge or tiny.
Yeah, just, figure it out. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, but the stats are pretty straightforward. You get the same...
Plus 2 to strength and minus 2 to intelligence and charisma. It doesn't matter what you pick.
That's right. It's the BHAs that get 3 different stat blocks. Yeah.
So, you can pick small, medium, or large. Mm-hmm. You get, an exoskeleton, so extra AC, low light vision. And then, of course, you can pick your extra arms or legs. If you got extra legs, you can skitter.
Yes. And I think skittering allows you to, move on the ceilings and so on. And if you're big, then you get the bonuses of being big.
Yeah.
So you can play as bugs. Then you can play the next one, should probably be cyborgs.
The bumpy-headed aliens.
Oh, okay. So BHAs are next. Bumpy-headed aliens is basically their joke about Star Trek, where anybody who has prosthetics glued to their forehead but are otherwise human.
Yeah, and their, of course, big thing is, you've got something that your entire culture is based on, so that's always you pick a skill and that's always a class skill for you.
And then the other, there's two of those, because one of them, one of them is something you always know your culture is entirely based around, like fighting or mating or whatever. And the other one is the thing that your culture has no concept of and refuses to gain a concept of.
Yeah, so you have one skill that you pick and it's always a class skill for you no matter what, because that's what your culture's into.
Yeah.
And then you roll on the taboo table
and I gotta
it's
say
just like, I don't understand beer and pretzels.
I was going to say, the thing I cannot stand here is the taboo table is already loaded down with one-off jokes.
Yes.
Which means that it isn't useful. Like, if your taboo table had things like honor and the color blue and so on it, then you could probably work that into gags yourself later.
Oh, yeah. But some of them are like, contractions or lying or privacy. And you go, okay.
Yeah.
Those are ones you can turn into fun jokes later. But other ones are like, I don't understand oiled up gladiatorial combat. Great.
When's that going to come up? I mean, the DM's going to be like, I guess I'll put in one oiled up gladiatorial combat for you to be like, I do not understand this.
What's going on?
Yeah. But otherwise, the joke's already been told. You told the joke when you rolled the character.
Yeah.
That's the worst aspect of comedy design, is when the joke is done before you even enter the game.
Yes.
So that's the kind of thing where I'm like, what you really needed here was to kind of stay your hand. Like, I get the idea, you were like, this is going to be a funny book, I'll write funny stuff. But really what you should write is the tools to generate funny stuff.
Yes. And, like I said, you've got some in there that you're like, you don't understand pet ownership.
Yeah.
That can generate some funny things. Great.
Granted, most of them are just jokes about existing characters, like contractions is most alien, Spock or any other alien. Pet ownership is Data. It's just jokes about the aliens. There's probably one in there that's perfect for Worf, too.
Meh.
I'm not a big fan of when the joke is already done before the game starts, but otherwise the BHAs are fine. They're just Star Trek aliens, and their gimmick is that you can choose one of three stat blocks for them based on whether they're suave, smart, or warlike.
Yeah, you can be
strong, smart, or suave, I think.
Fierce, smart, or suave, yeah.
Yeah, so you get three blocks. Other than that,
they also roll on a table of, aside from your bumpy head, what is weird about you?
That's true, yes. So you get a couple of random tables. Then you've got the cyborgs. Cyborgs are all human for whatever reason. Like, it doesn't say you can play as a bumpy-headed alien that is also a cyborg. It's just like...
Yeah, you can get cybernetic implant.
But if you start as a cyborg, if your species is cyborg, it's because you're a human who went a little too far with the cyborging.
Yeah. Now, the cybernetic... I hate saying that.
But it's a funny joke, though, John.
No, it's funny because it's joke, normally cybernetic, but we called it cyborgnetic.
Yeah, because it's also sometimes cyborg, so if you combine the two...
Hey.
Mm.
But if you get an implant, you can get some stuff, and those are all just like feats. Pretty much everything in this is just feats you can get. But if you get it, then it trades out 2 points of
Constitution
for whatever you're getting.
Yes, and several of them are jokes, so you'll never take them because you're like, oh, well, there's a hard and fast rule that I'll lose Constitution if I take anything. So should I choose the cybernetic feat for braces that make my teeth straight? No, I shouldn't, because I don't want to lose Constitution for a funny haha. And if you're playing as a cyborg, instead of paying 2 Constitution, you pay 1. And in certain situations, you can get them for free instead.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, the fact that you basically just start out as, oh, what's your whole thing? I pay less for cybernetic stuff, and I get a +2 bonus on 2 of their made-up skills for this game. Great. Yeah. That's it.
Yep. So they're pretty, they're pretty straightforward. Then you've got felines.
And yeah, that's just cat people.
Cat people. I would like to say that they're more based on Red Dwarf than what you already know they're based on. But no, their whole story is like one time a whole planet of nerds met a whole planet of anime enthusiasts, and some of the geneticists designed a cat girl species to be for maximum titillation. But then they realized that cat girls also suggested cat boys, and everyone lost interest, even though their skirts were super high.
So yeah, they get some claws and bites, mm-hmm. and of course they have the curiosity trait,
yeah.
which might kill them, you see.
Also, anytime they are described as talking, they work in meow and purr in everything they say. So they'll be like, I'm meowly nice to purr meet you. It's not very well done. So they're more irritating than anything else, and they are entirely a joke about how anime fans like cat girls.
Yeah, great.
So a lot of page space in this book dedicated to that gag. I don't know. This book's from like the 90s, right? So maybe that.
It's
gonna be from 2000s.
Because I was gonna say the Star Munchkin base card game came out in like 2002, 3.
Yeah, this
something?
Might be from around 2004 to 2006, somewhere in there.
Oh no way, man! This had to come out way later than that.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Except that fourth edition started around 2008, so there is a limit to the point where these OGL things.
No,
have
I guess
a line.
I guess it must have. Dang.
So anyway, that maybe that gag still had some play at that time, that whole, like, nerds like cat girls, and this book does a lot of that, where it's like, everybody who makes any decision ever is a male, which is why they built these cat girl things, and then when they realized there were going to be cat boys, everyone was like, ew, gross, never mind, because for whatever reason, one of the problems I keep running into with Munchkin is that they seem to think that, you know, women are for titillation and men are for being lumpy adventurers. And any women, and then they create women in the Munchkin and Dork Tower universe who are like, it's fine, I'm bisexual. I also like being appealed to via high sexualizations. I'm excusing all of this.
I'm the person that doesn't exist that says this is okay.
Yeah.
next up, we have mutants. Mutants get some energy resist, and they get some mostly the ability to take the mutation feats without losing charisma, because like the cybernetics cost you 2 constitution to take, mutation feats cost you 2 charisma to take.
Yeah.
But they don't lose any charisma because they're already fugly.
But I think they start with a charisma penalty, right?
Yeah, they're like
they're
plus 2.
They're big half orcs.
Yeah, no, because that's
more like BA.
The bugs.
Yeah.
The bugs are +2 strength and then the -2 in
right.
charisma. They're just, I think, +2 con, -2 charisma.
Oh, so the dwarves. Okay, sure. But their whole thing is they're written as, like, deliverance-style mutants, where they're all, like, they all constantly talk like backwoods hillbilly types.
Well, yeah, because they all mutated from humans by going out where there was radiation and also dating their cousins.
Do you get it?
Great.
All right. And then all the art of them is of people with like 2 heads.
Yeah, it's all just 2-headed people.
And believe me, it's 2-headed little lumpy guys and their hot 2-headed girlfriends.
But I do like, you know, of the various species you can get, I like that they didn't just do, here's space dwarves, here's space elves, although they're like,
well, the reason they didn't do that is because this game is compatible with the Munchkin OGL role-playing game, which has all those races in it.
Oh, yeah. Like, look, if you want to just say, There's an elf. It comes from a planet of elves. Great. Whatever. Use those stats. You can do that.
Yeah. Notably, they used most of those stats. So if you're like, there's a dwarf. He comes from the planet of the dwarves. And he says, oh, I guess he has the same stat spread as the mutants. But
he doesn't have any of the same abilities.
Let's just not get into that part. So is there anything else? Or is that all of them?
Those are all the species.
Yeah.
And then all the new classes they have.
Mm-hmm. Which are...
The bounty hunter?
Yeah. The classes aren't that interesting. They're mostly just bonus feat piles. The species are mostly bonus feat piles, because like mutants can take the mutation feats without taking charisma penalties.
Yeah, and then they do have a chart for like, oh, what's your base save bonus and then your base attack bonus.
That was the other thing I liked in here.
But those are split into best, bester, and bestest.
Okay, I don't like that part. Let's make this clear. We've been complaining about this for 10 years. The joke for your game should not be the names of categories in the game, because that will not apply to gameplay.
No. The second I write down that I've got a +6 and I'm using the bestest chart, I'm not going to ever mention that again, and I don't want to.
Yeah. The jokes need to come organically up during the game, and your job is to support that, not to write the yucks yourself. This isn't Mad Magazine. This is a game.
Yeah.
But the idea behind best, bester, and bestest, I honestly kind of liked, because basically what it did was it took the kind of three or so base attack bonus progressions that the OGL offers, you know, fighter version, cleric version, rogue version, wizard, whichever one, and condensed them. So there's one big chart that shows all three, and then when you play as a character, if you're like the bounty hunter has bestest ranged attacks and best melee attacks, melee attack. I don't remember offhand.
You have a regular attack, your gunnery attack, so yeah. If you're in like a ship.
Yes.
And then you have a psychic. If you are a psychic, you have a psychic attack.
Yes. So the idea is that you get the same, you'd be like, it'd be the equivalent of D&D saying you just get monk progression for your base attack bonus.
Yes.
Except they change the names to best, bester, and bestest, which I like the concept of streamlining that, so you know, you can have a single table in the game and skip a lot of tables. I don't like calling them jokes. It would, if they had just been called A, B, and C, so they were memorable.
No. I mean, one of the things I will say in this is they are better than the regular ones, because everyone starts out +1 higher than they would have been in their category already.
Yes, they do.
So you can get up to, like, if you're in the bestest progression or the standard fighter progression, when you get to 20th, you'll actually have 6 attacks instead of 5 attacks.
That's right, yeah. So they are slightly better, but you still get the exact same, you know, saves and all that other stuff. It's all in one big table, or one big chart. And then we go down the individual classes, starting with Bounty Hunter. And I haven't read the book in a couple days, so I don't remember who's got what for their base attack bonus progressions.
I mean, their base attack is the bestest, their gunner is bester, who gives a shit?
Yeah, they're...
And of course, your proficiencies for weapons, they have both noob and hardcore weapons that they can use.
Which is simple and martial, sure, why not?
And then they didn't decide to do that for the armor. They're like, you've got noob and hardcore weapons, also light and medium armors. And you're like, all right, man, sure. You decided to do one dumb joke and not the other, all right.
Yeah, now, Bounty Hunter, I believe, is a bonus feat class. Kind of like fighter, where it just gets some bonus feats.
Yeah, they have a couple classes that are you get bonus feat progression.
Yes, and that's all they really do. This game used feats to solve a lot of the game. You know, I can respect that. That's a useful source of game design levers to pull from. But mostly the class sections have that thing where it's like, what does every other class think about this class? Because that's always a great source of jokes.
Yep, that's more jokes we can tell.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, you have to have a bunch of Boba Fett jokes in here. Yeah. Where like, oh, they have mystique, so if no one ever sees your face, you get a bonus on AC because you're so mysterious.
They did,
and
so...
fanboys will defend you to the end of the earth.
Yeah, they did so much Boba Fett material. It's like he's the only bounty hunter that this author could think of at all.
Yeah,
like ever. So that, I mean, literally within the bounty hunter on the page it's on, there are two different Boba Fett name puns.
Oh yeah, you've got the, like, sample character Bobby Feet.
Yeah, Bobby Feet, who's been cloned so many times except for his feet, that his feet are bigger than the rest of him.
And, of course, you've got... they have the contract ability, so you can get some... you can basically just go, hey, I want the ability to go fight a guy, and the monster, or the Munchkin Masters goes, all right, here's a CR whatever, you can go fight him.
Yeah.
And as long as you can bring back them alive, you get full, and you get half if they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
But no money if you can't bring back anything, so no disintegrations. You remember from Boba Fett?
Yeah. And there's also the name Boba Fett shows up again somewhere on that page. I don't remember where, but they just went out of their way to be
like... Oh, yes. Because yeah. Your Mystique is the Boba Fett.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. See what I mean? It's just the same joke like several times. Like, we're going to Bosk one or something. You're writing this for nerds. They're going to know who that is.
Nope.
After them is...
The Farce Knigget,
okay.
Which, good lord.
That is a Monty Python joke. Save that for your Munchkin stuff.
Also, that...
It's too much jokes.
It's old. It's an old-ass joke.
Yeah, that shit's from 1975. That joke is as old as Dungeons & Dragons.
Yep.
That Knigget stuff.
You can just say Farce Knight, and we can go like, oh, I get it, like the Force, okay. But when you put the, like, K... apostrophe N-I-G-I, and you're like, okay, yeah, I get it.
No, I know where you're going. I get it. What is the airspeed of an unladen swallow? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we can.
Did that have anything to do with the character class? No, of course not.
No, they're Jedi. Their gimmick is that they get more access to farce points.
Yeah, because they have some bonus, they get bonus farce feats, so you'll have more of those than most other people, mm-hmm. And you also get points, because normally the feats that are the farce ones we mentioned, they'll usually be like, you can do this 3 times per session.
Yeah, you can do it 3 times per session, tops.
If you are a Force Knigget, then you get extra points, which just let you spend points to do them more often.
Yes, and might as well dive into what those powers are here, even though we've been kind of skipping over the feats. There's stuff like, tell your friend he's thirsty and he has to go up and go and get a drink.
And if his turn comes up,
yeah.
While he's getting a drink, then you get to control his turn. Be sure to look at all of his notes. I'm like, what note? Why would I look at his notes?
Why would he have secrets? What are we talking about? Is there a portion of this game that's hidden information that you forgot to put into your 80-page book?
It's a very strange thing that you're like, yeah, look at his notes. I'm like, what notes? What is he keeping track of that you are going to get?
Yeah. And, I mean, ultimately, I like the concept of the game affects the players. I think that's a fun idea. I don't think it's fun if it's pure PvP abuse stuff like that, where you're like, you got to skip your turn.
Oh, that's the worst one. Because the other one's being like, oh, if you offer food to the GM and they take it, then you get a plus bonus to whatever. And then there's ones that are like, oh, if you offer something to one of your friends rather than the GM, then you get like a bonus to damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all just little bonuses you can earn that take an entire action to do, and then you're like, yay, I used my action to give the DM a pizza slice. Now when I attack in the next round, I'll get +1 damage.
And then, of course, the ones that don't affect the outside like thing and are just in-game things are mostly just annoying asshole things where it's like, oh, I have farce grab and I can call dibs on any item, even if someone called dibs on it,
which
and
is
I just immediately get it.
That's perfect if you're playing the Munchkin card game, to be like, oh, we got 3 treasures off killing that Dianogant, I want that one good treasure, so I'm going to use this force power to steal it. But in an RPG, that's just, you got to keep playing with the same characters and you still have a shared goal.
Yeah. It's,
They get a bonus to using a specific type of weapon as well. This game has its own variety of energy weapon jokes, and in their case, it's just photonic, which is lightsabers, but in order to avoid copyright infringement, all of their lightsabers are curved and look like cutlasses.
Yeah, great.
Mm-hmm.
other than that, yeah, they get, one of their best things at all is that they increase their threat range
on photon weapons
every even level, to the point where you're like, at 6th level, your crit range is like 15 to 20.
Yeah, their crit range expands dramatically very fast. Just very, very fast.
Yeah.
They didn't really work the math out on that, but I get why they did it. It's because, you know,
I'm going to cut your hand off.
They cut hands off. That's not what crits do in D&D, but why not, though? I think it is with photonic weapons, though. So if you're using a photonic weapon, then yeah, you can choose to lop off arms.
Then there's the Gadgeteer, which is probably the most useless. It's
so boring, I forgot it was in there.
Oh yeah, it's just, you can hack things, but we made it so that hacking things is incredibly complicated and
there's so much
difficult, and you can only do, like, one minor thing per hack, but it doesn't do anything if they save.
They are the classic example, and I don't really know if we've ever talked about this before as a concept, so we can work this one out real quick here, of a character class that both introduces and solves a discrete problem that would not exist if that character class was not in the game.
Uh-huh.
So all they do is they're like, oh, they can break through enemy firewalls, but be sure to defend your own equipment because that means enemy hackers are going to get yours. So you better, if you have a gadgeteer, he's going to spend most of his downtime installing ice and firewalls on everyone's computers. And you're like, I just would prefer to not engage in this aspect of the game. Thank you. Because it's just a bunch of roles and there's no dynamism to it.
And the problem is, like, one of the other classes is the psychic.
Mm-hmm.
They have a baseline ability that they're like, oh, if you fail a save against me, I can just control the actions of a person for, like, as many rounds as I have levels,
yeah,
which is insanely powerful to just be able to do on command. Whereas this is like, all right, did you want to try and control a robot? Well, you're going to need to make a roll to hack in there. Now that you've hacked and slashed in there, then you can...
You have to overcome the firewall. Then you need to learn the local operating system.
You have to roll to get in there, then roll to try and take control. And then every round, it's going to make a save to boot you out. And if it does, you're going to have to use your turn to get back in there and then do another action to take control and then do another action to make it do an action. I'm like, this is pointless and bad.
They can also invent stuff, and they have two ways of doing it. One of them is a classic craft roll where you have to gather an insane amount of money and equipment, and then you can make a couple of attempts to build the thing that you want.
Yeah, but it's honestly just you can craft, but at a cheaper cost.
Mm-hmm. And then also you can craft super fast, but it breaks when you're done using it.
Yeah, the jury rig is the only thing that's remotely useful, but it's only for, like, someone knocked our shields out on our spaceship because, of course, this has vehicle rules for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, I can repair them, but they only last for like 5 rounds.
Yes. And then after that's the psionic, which we already talked about. They get access to the psionic feats. This game doesn't have a magic system. Everything's done in feats.
But they have psychic powers, which are all, you get some power points. You can do a ton of nonsense, like you can just, you know, look into rooms that are nearby.
Mm-hmm.
You can you can prognosticate, where if you've managed to successfully make your check, then the Munchkin Master has to tell you what this character's going to do on each of its turns, and it's not allowed to change that action.
You know what? I like that. I'm going to be honest with you. I always hate augury and divination and any other power that they stick into D&D that's just like, you get to ask the DM about the future, and they have to tell you what they think is true, but the future is vague and uncertain, so there's no way to know, and it's like, this is a waste of time. Waste of everybody's time. The DM doesn't know what's happening 10 minutes from now. Why should he have to tell you that? But this, where it's like, oh, it forces the future to run on a track for a little while, that's a good way to do divination.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that it's just like, you pick one person and go, what is that guy going to do for the next 3 rounds?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, he's going to try and move over here and attack this guy, and then the next turn, keep attacking him.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that'll happen unless, you know,
that guy, his target dies or something.
Yeah, he's like, oh, he was going to attack him for 3 turns, but that guy's dead now.
Yeah. So I actually liked that. I mean, granted, it's too powerful of an ability, but then again, the psychic in this game is just kind of too powerful in general.
Oh, yeah.
But
they can throw people and make them take falling damage, but again, that's just I do a check, and if you fail, I fling you.
Yeah, they have a ludicrous amount of mind control capability, which is fine, but it definitely overshadows at least half the other classes.
Oh, yeah.
But the prognostication, even if it is overpowered, it's probably my favorite interpretation of how to do future sight in a game I've seen in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, the psychic abilities and everything that they get baseline is interesting because it's not like this has spells or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the ability to get more, so it's amazing how front-loaded, really, that the psychic is, because they're like, oh, you're going to get all of your shit immediately.
Yeah, which really means the best thing you can do in this game is to play as a psychic one, Force Knight. I'm not saying the real version of that the rest of the way.
I mean, it's so interesting that some of these are just way better.
Yes, yeah. Especially, let's take as a case in point, the last class that you could choose.
Well, there's two classes.
Oh, there's two more coming?
There's Space Ranger.
Oh, I completely forgot about Space Ranger, which is just Ranger plus space.
No, man, Space Ranger
is more like a pilot.
It's the it's the Space Marine equivalent is the jokes that they are doing. And that's both Space Marine, like aliens, Space Marine, and Space Marine, like Space Marine.
They have to, given that there's a Space Marine, like 40K style Space Marine joke on the cover of the book.
Yeah. And these are, you've got the best, basically like the fighters. They're like, you've got the best in attacking and fighting and everything else.
Yes.
And you get bonus feats like a fighter would get.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the only ability you get that's remotely interesting beyond just being a space fighter is you can call in an airstrike,
which takes too long to be useful in most combats.
Oh yeah. You're like, oh, you designate an area that's like, depending on what level you are, like a little radius. And then 1d10 rounds later, it'll blow up. And I'm like, man, if you roll a 10, combat is over by the time that shows up.
Yes, exactly. It takes a little too long. And then, there's really not much to them. They're just jokes for a place to put in Marine jokes. And then finally is the traitor.
Yeah, the traitor.
Who's just entirely like haggle checks and charisma stuff. They don't have a whole lot of combat applications. Their gimmick is supposed to be that they're the one with the ship.
Yeah, they have a ship. Their whole thing is they start with sidekicks, because that was a thing that got introduced in the Space or Star Munchkin card game.
Yep.
Was the idea of sidekicks. So they're the ones who are like, oh, you get one, or you can get a bunch of red shirts.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole section in here on how red shirts are and how they operate, because there's a list of sidekicks and towards the back of the book.
Yeah, because they just took all of the sidekicks from the game and went, well, I guess we give them D&D stats. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
But yeah, they can start with a couple of sidekicks that are effectively supposed to crew their ship, is the idea.
But they get, in addition to that, they can be non-combatants for a while. So if you really love the idea of not playing this game, then you could be like, oh, for like charisma plus level rounds, I can be like not attacked and it goes away if I attack.
Yeah, you get that diplomatic immunity effect, which it shows up in a lot of OGL games. There's a reason it's not in the core games normally, which is because it's boring and it's just going to make other people mad at you. And they're like, we've been attacked by 20 goblins. And you're like, guys, I won't help.
Yeah.
That'll help.
The problem is it's always, you have to do it at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's not like you can use it as like, oh, everyone's dead. And then you go, oh, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, oh, I have to decide at the start if I want to just let them get fucked over. But then if you jump in, you're jumping in at a worse time because you should have started there to help.
Yeah. It'd be more useful if they were really good at offering surrender opportunities. If they could end the fight early, that'd be a nice thing.
Yeah. And then their other thing is normally when you sell an item, you sell it for like half the market price. They sell it for full, which
they can roll. There's like a whole thing.
Oh, no. They just sell for full.
Oh, okay. Because there's a whole like trading thing in here where you have to like roll a percentage and try and haggle someone, and if you beat them, then you get to reduce it by 5% value for each 5%.
Oh, that's just the haggle skill.
That's right. That's this game's space haggle skill. And if you lose to them, then you have to pay them more for the thing. And there's a whole thing where, like, if you lose a skill roll on haggle, and you're like, ah, fuck it, I'm just not going to do this. I'm not going to participate in this sale anymore. Then you immediately get put on a bounty board and marked for death.
Yeah.
Which I assume they had to do to get around the fact that they wrote this complicated haggle mechanic and then realized after they were done that players could easily be like, I'll roll haggle. You rolled very badly. I just won't make the trade. I'll just say no.
The other thing I immediately look at is like, oh, okay, you're just going to get, because this whole thing is like, oh, is get as much money as possible. You're like, great, you get a gadgeteer who cheaply builds things, then you sell them for wholesale, so you just get a trader and a gadgeteer, and they make and sell shit for ridiculous profit until you get enough money to buy a Star Annihilator.
Mm-hmm. I think the easiest thing to do would just be like, oh, I'll roll haggle to sell this to this guy. Did I roll so that I didn't get the maximum possible value out of him? I kill him. Now I've got all of his money and my thing back. That's in the true spirit of munchkinning.
Boy, howdy.
And no one's going to put me on a bounty board because he's dead.
Then we get to the feet.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them, but largely because cyborgnetics, farce powers, psychic powers, and mutations are all feats, along with some extra ones for just being a better pilot or for gadget stuff.
Yeah. Now, the mutation ones are ridiculous just mm-hmm. because they have a mutation feat for each stat that is you gain +4 to this stat.
Yes.
And
I think it's funny that the there's a charisma one because
oh, like, yeah, and they even say, ah, oh, you're getting kind of hosed on this one.
Kind of, but not really, because each
it's
one of them is
still +2 to it, your stat.
Yeah, because it's normally you're taking a -2, I think it's a -2 charisma penalty to take a mutation, and the mutations for stat penalties are stackable +4s.
Yep.
So even if you take the feat for, like, charisma and you're not a mutant, you just get 2 extra charisma as opposed to 4 extra charisma.
Yeah. They're still ridiculously good, mm-hmm. and for the most part, probably the only thing you're going to take if you're just actually being a munchkin about it.
Yes, because +4 to a stat is way better than a lot of the other options. You can just take, you can just jack your dexterity and strength into the stratosphere and be like, oh, geez, I'm so ugly. My charisma is ruined. Oh, wait, I don't care.
That, or you're like, I play as a mutant, which gives me extra mutation feats.
Yes.
And then I just go, all right, whatever. I jack my dexterity up so high that my AC is insane. And
I can shoot these guns that the game has.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't need to do melee combat. I'm just going to win from a distance because I've got a dexterity of 26.
And then you look at... The problem being that when you look at that, you're like, all right, I could get +4 to whatever my primary stat is, or I could get Darkly Insidious. It's a Darth Sidious joke where you have a if you put a robe on, no one knows your secret identity and you can be evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or
you could just do that anyway. There's not really anything stopping you from wearing a cloak all the time if you want. But that Darth Sidious thing, by the way, means that we do know pretty much when this game came out, because he wasn't Darth Sidious in the first two of the prequels, not till around 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
Hmm. But yeah. The mutation feats are either the stat ones, which are amazing, and then a couple that are like just jokes, you know, like, oh, you've got two heads, you can get in an argument with yourself, or you can belch acid on people, but it does less damage than just buying a laser. So, you know, just buy a laser.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of things in here that's like, what's this? Oh, you speak in weird speaking because you're an alien.
Yeah.
And
that's the Wookiee one.
Yeah.
Everyone who's your friend already understands you anyway.
Does this have any sort of mechanical? No. No, it does not.
Yeah. And we said the same. I said the same thing earlier about the cybornetics, where some of them are things like you're cyborgishly strong and you have extra hit points. One of them is that you have braces.
Yeah, it's just this straightens your teeth.
It's just a gag. I get it. It's fun. Hooray. It's a gag. Whatever. One of them is you have better teeth. Like, you can get cybornetic teeth for if you are a... No, I'm sorry. That's in the gear section.
Yes, that's actual gear.
You can have false teeth for, like, if you are a cat per...
Yeah,
you're
a feline. Have diamond-tipped teeth.
Yes, yeah, so you can bite people harder if you're a feline. It increases them by 1 die size for the bite, which means now you bite for a D6.
Great.
Why would you do this?
One of the feats you can take is that you're a Springer guest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you get a bonus when interacting with mutants, because only mutants watch Springer.
Huh? Yeah, and it even mentions, like, mutants constantly watch Springer. The other races in this game probably just get Springer between watching their soaps.
Oh, the prerequisite to take this feat is you had to have had a chair thrown at you.
Okay.
Great. Thanks.
I mean, do you need to have been had a chair thrown at you to go on Springer? I thought that was where you went to get chairs thrown at you. That feels a little self-defeating. Man, when do you think the Springer joke became dated? Are we already past it?
I mean,
it at this
we already
point?
Have a Knigget joke in here, so yeah. Being dated is not a thing they care about.
I just want to, because, you know, the Knigget one is like, yeah, okay, it's referencing classic role-playing game table jokes. Honestly, what I'm more surprised is there aren't any South Park jokes I encountered in here than the fact that there is a Monty Python one. But Springer's like, Springer died way harder than Monty Python ever did. Like, when Springer was done, Springer was done.
Yeah, well,
yeah, that'll happen. So, okay, and then yeah, there's
they have their own alignment system.
They do. It's just 9 jokes.
They're like, oh, you can be evil with 3 E's and an exclamation point.
Yeah,
or you can be the gun bunny alignment.
Yeah, which
no one cares. Yeah, none of this matters.
It's just a The problem with, again, this is going to come down to, I feel bad whenever we review a comedy game because we make the same basic points that these alignment jokes are things where you write down the joke on your sheet and then I guess you could repeat that joke during the game if you would like to.
Hey, you remember that joke that was in the book?
Yeah. Well, what if I said it now? What if I told you guys I was lawful stupid? I get enough of that from the internet. Thanks.
In the equipment section, they've just got a whole bunch of joke things. They included from the card game the whole, like, you
lasers,
yeah. Laser, because they're like, oh, there are lasers and mazers and gazers. What if there was a banana fan of faux phaser?
You're like, I remember that card from Star Munchkin. Yeah. And they're like, well, here it is.
Here it is. You can combine all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you do, you take half of the damage of whatever you're combining into it and add it to the other one.
Which doesn't really matter because only like the first three of them do any damage. Laser, mazer, gazer, or
honestly,
phaser.
If you take these and keep combining them, you will get to an absolutely amazingly stupid powerful weapon.
You will, but they stop adding damage after the first couple. The rest all add things like stun effects and knockbacks and so on.
I think
one of them adds a disintegration saving throw.
Most of them are just different types of damage.
Mm.
So there's like some do like lightning and some do force and some do whatever.
Right.
The only ones that don't really do damage are like the dazer and the, I think, X-Razor.
The Go-Wazer.
The Go-Wazer does force damage.
It does? I thought
to
it
knock
just,
you back.
Oh, I thought, okay, that's what it does. All right, I thought it just straight up gets you with a knockback. And then there's also the different types of weapon, the neuralizing and photonic and shockety, you know, just that kind of... And that's what the melee weapons all come in. They all come in, you pick one of these. So they have things like, oh, it's a neural whip or it's a photonic cutlass.
Yeah. And, of course, their armor is more jokes where it's like, you can wear a gold mesh bikini as armor.
Strategically placed ribbons. And they always do the exact same joke, which is, if you're a lady, this gives you a extra armor class bonuses because you're hot, so it's distracting.
Yeah, it's not an armor bonus. You get a +4 distraction bonus.
Yeah, but if you're one of these covalic little lump met potato people, then you get a +4 distraction bonus because you're so ugly, and why are you wearing that hot lady outfit? Stop doing that.
Just... And then a bunch of dumb jokes as the other things.
Yeah.
It's just so many jokes.
Stop doing the thing where you're like, if a woman wears this, it's hot, and if a man wears this, it's nasty, and they have the same effect of being distracting.
Yeah.
Just don't do that.
Now, the fact that this has an entire fucking section on vehicles, I was like, but why?
I know.
There weren't vehicles in the game, and then you just decided to put an entire giant vehicle section in.
There's
here.
A section at the beginning where he's like running down the breakdown, the chapter listing, and he mentions vehicles, and he's like, well, obviously you need to be able to blow up these other spaceships.
Well, yeah, that's because like we need to have jokes about vehicle names so we can get Star Annihilators and Star Disruptors.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll take some of the letters that weren't used in Star Wars X-Wings and use those instead. A Q-Wing? Yeah, you get the idea. You know, the Starfleck Bemper Prize. It's not the same ship you thought it was.
We're really scraping the bottom of Mads' barrel. While I'm scraping the bottom of Mads Mikkelsen.
They ought to call them the Blech Men.
Yeah, it's no good.
Well, what are you going to do? There's a little monster sec.
Honestly, that's the most disappointing thing to me is the monster section.
Mm-hmm.
Where they didn't even have all of the monster jokes from the game. It was just like, I don't know, there's a green slimy thing and a tentacle thing and there's a pervert guy.
Yeah.
And a boring guy. And I'm like, wow, you are phoning the end of this book in.
Yeah, it's like he can smell the finish line or something. I mean, granted, we just finished writing a chunk of a book, and I know that by the end I was like, you're gonna toss off joke, whatever, here, just deadlines. And if you're listening and you're our publisher, I'm kidding.
That was a joke.
That was a joke. We maintain a consistent level of quality from day one to day 30. So anyway, and also, hello. It's nice to see that you're a fan.
Hello. Welcome.
Please purchase our fine book products wherever fine books are sold.
Yeah, so... That was just sad for me to see that they were like, all right, here's all this dumb garbage, and then none of it is even, like, they didn't even try to do fun jokes or anything in there.
Well, yeah, look, the space monsters are a big part of the Star Munchkin game, so it's surprising to not see a lot of that in here.
Yeah.
I assume it's because they were hoping to get another book out at some point. Yeah, maybe there even is one.
I mean, the only ones you really get, you get the clown troopers,
mm-hmm.
which for some reason they were like, all right, well, we took clone troopers and said they're clowns, so we gave them a bunch of, like, party balloon animal tricks and stuff, but then we also included farce in this, so we'll also give them farce powers, so we're literally just going to take every Star Wars thing and make it one guy.
Yes, yeah, the clown troopers are in there, then plus a bunch of, like, gross slimes. It's not very interesting. Then there's a little adventure in the back that I'm going to be honest, I didn't read.
Well, it's because it's just there's 12 tables, and you're like, on table one, table two, there is a planet of table three.
Oh, yeah, that's a bummer, because those are never, again, that's one of those things that does the joke for you.
Yep.
Because I'll guarantee you, not that I've even looked at it, that they overwrote it, so that you'll be like, it's a planet of giant springs that don't know they're springs, but don't like the taste of lemon pies.
Oh,
and
no.
You're like, oh, great, thanks for way super writing that.
There are angry space ninjas that are in the avocado system that worship Gloom Bunny. And you're like, great, sure.
Okay. Well, at least I can make some of those, like, wild women of the avocado jungle jokes. But other than that, no, I'm good. Thank you. So, yeah. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. You're running this show. I was about to start leading us into favorites and least favorites, and
you can't do that.
No, I can't. It's been usurped from
Unallowed.
Me.
Unallowed.
No. I guess I just got to sit here.
You just got to sit there until I bring you in.
Oh, okay.
So I was thinking maybe we should talk more about this book for another hour. And
yeah, I think it's a great idea.
All right, let's go ahead and get into the least and most and greatest and worst,
mm-hmm.
the tops and the bottoms, the strikes and the gutters.
This is why I usually lead the show.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Get out.
On my way. Thank you. You're going to be editing.
Thank you and good night. All right. Worst thing in this book. Try to narrow it down as much as possible to a single thing. One thing.
The book.
One thing in the book.
The pages.
The words.
I mean, I'm probably going to say the there's a lot to dislike here. I'm probably going to go with the feline backstory.
Sure.
Like, this book's a lot of boring. It's not interesting. It's a standard comedy book, right? Where I'm mostly going to pick the joke I found the most irritating. And that's the one where it's like, oh, it was a planet of anime conventions and a planet of nerd geneticists. And they made it for species. And then when people realized they would have two genders, they were like, ew.
Hmm.
I was like, nah, that's the one. Pass. Hard pass.
Great.
Not worth it to work this species in, because they don't do a fuck all beyond that joke.
Great.
What about you?
I mean, if I wanted to pick something, like, mechanically, I'd probably say the Gadgeteer.
It is bad class.
It's the worst class in there. Like, at least even the Traitor has, like, a Bester for their attack bonus, so they're...
And they have minions and stuff.
And you got some guys.
Minions mean extra battlefield turns. That could potentially matter.
You know, we didn't say it, but sidekicks will do things like jump in front of attacks for you.
Yes, they will.
So, you know, they serve a purpose. You get extra money. Great. Awesome.
Start with a ship.
But the Gadgeteer is not only so convolutedly bad,
mm-hmm.
in that you've got to spend, like, 5 rounds trying to do one fucking thing,
mm-hmm.
but also, like,
I feel like
it
fits the theme.
In the Star Munchkin card game, or even any of the Munchkin ones, if you draw a class and you're like, okay, I guess I'll be this class because there's no downside to it.
Yeah.
But then if something else comes up, you can always be that.
Yeah.
But in a game where you get to pick, where you can be a Munchkin, having a class that's like, oh, this is clearly just bad.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no one has to pick this, and so they won't.
Yeah.
You have provided us with at least 3 very powerful classes and another couple useful ones, and then this trash.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, It's close in a couple of directions to being in theme for a space game, but never quite hits the landing. Like, if it was a little more about the jury rigging, then sure, you could pass it off as, like, the Scotty the Engineer type class.
Oh, yeah. If you had a lot more that was based on, like, oh, you've got the ability to, like, oh, I do, you know, a thing, and I can make it so that for the next four attacks, my laser is plus three damage or something. Anything that would allow you to mechanically be better that wasn't like I spend five turns and now I can hack the Gibson and no one gives a shit.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, there's a couple different directions you could take that one in. The Scotty would make a lot of sense. I would also say if you gave them a single tool that, like, they could use for any skill role involving tools, so they could do, like, a Doctor Who Sonic Screwdriver joke with them. It's something.
Something.
But as it stands, it feels like they were imported from a basic game that didn't really have a lot of space stuff in mind.
Nah, no, it's... So. It just doesn't work
as
well as the others. And in a game all about being as powerful and munchkin-y as possible, having a class that's just like, I fart around and doodle with nonsense.
If you guys give me four turns, I might be able to take over that one robot.
For a turn.
We could just shoot that robot, though.
In four turns, that robot's dead, my dude.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite thing for you in this book?
Kind of a toss-up. I like the streamlined math of the basic chart that tells you the best, best, or bestest, but it is tainted by the fact that they're called best, best, or bestest.
Yeah.
That should have had a different name. It doesn't need the joke. I'm going to actually go with the other thing that I really liked in this game, which is that prognostication ability they gave the psionic, which is future sight by locking a single target into doing the same the thing the DM says they will for three turns. I thought that was a smart bit of clever game design that I would like to see used in more places.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my favorite single individual thing.
Great.
Look how granular I'm keeping it.
Great.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm going to go ahead and say
the whole book.
Just everything's great, and I love this
whole
book.
The whole thing's just wonderful.
It's fucking amazing top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd say the farce power.
Sure.
That the few that are like, oh, if you make someone at the table laugh, then you can get a plus one to damage or, you know, handing out food or doing whatever. The one that's like
stealing someone's turn
is bullshit, and I hate it.
Yeah.
But the ones that are mostly just like, oh, I can do stuff outside a game and kind of do stuff in game with it. That's fun. I do like that.
It does. I think the make everyone laugh at the table thing starts with the squirt milk out their nose joke, but ultimately sticks the real landing of like if everybody at the table laughs.
Yeah, if you can get people to laugh, then you just go, great, I'm using one of my uses of this.
Because I've seen that joke done before where like in order to get the point or the bonus or whatever.
It's like if they laugh, you get a plus one. And if they squirt soda out their nose, you get a plus three.
And I'm like, I have seen that happen at a game table once in the 20 odd years I've been playing role-playing games. Quit writing rules for it. It doesn't happen enough.
Yeah. All right. Would you play this game?
No.
Of course, it's an OGL.
OGL game. I'm good.
I don't want to play a comedy game, and I really don't want to play a comedy OGL game.
Yeah, it's kind of the perfect storm of not my thing. Do I think that there are people out there who would like to play this game?
Unfortunately,
also no.
Unfortunately, yes.
Because if you want to play Star Munchkin, it's widely available. And at least it fits its own theme, where it's like, oh yeah, you do play a hack and slash character who will betray his friends. Where this is like, it's Dungeons and Dragons, but I guess you're supposed to betray your friends, but we didn't include any rules for that, except for that one farce power that no one likes.
Yeah, there's something in there under the bounty hunter, which is like, oh, if they don't include you in
you can charge them. There's a thing in the bounty hunter where if you help kill a monster, you can force everyone else in the party to pay you credits, and if they don't, then you put them on the bounty board and you get to hunt them.
Yeah. I was like, oh wow, the only character class or ability that actually is about fighting other players.
Yes. And it's works exactly like a Munchkin card, which is like, hey, even if I don't help you with this combat, I get a pick of the treasure.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, or I get some of the gold or whatever. I get the level. It's one of those cards, but it's built into a D&D class, and it kind of works the way, you know, you see jokes about people playing clerics in D&D and be like, charging for healing.
Yeah.
It's like that, where you're like, oh, I'm going to help you guys fight this space orc. I get 200 credits from each of you for doing this, though.
Yeah. Boo. All right. There you go. That's Star Munchkin for you. Thank you all for joining us. Now, of course, we do have more. We are going to be going over to our Patreon. If you want to join us at patreon.com/systemmastery, We are going to make characters, some OGL Star Munchkin characters.
Oh boy, I can't
wait
to make them.
Will we cheat and give them straight 18s in stats? Who knows?
I might, just because that way I don't actually borrow dice from you and write things down. I could just be like, work out the bonuses in my head because my character has straight 18s.
So we are going to go ahead and do that. If you join us over at patreon.com/systemmastery at the $1 level, you will be able to come along and join us as we dive into the absolute trash nonsense that is making a character in an OGL comedy game.
And hey, if you would like to hear something more interesting than that, and who would blame you, then why not support us at a higher level? Because if you join us at the $2 level, you get all of our Star Wars bonus content, where we go to Wikipedia, we find fun stories to tell each other and to you. And if you join us at the $5 level, not only do you get our monthly Afterthought show, but you also get the TV Mastery, where we are currently figuring out what we're going to do next time, because John had a great idea, only to be thwarted by the average length of the episode.
Thwarted by my own laziness.
Well, we already have to watch them. I don't want to watch two movies every other week. It's not cool.
Not cool, my dude.
So we're still in development on season, was that 4 of TV Mastery?
Yeah. But, we've got a whole bunch of content for you. We've got everything you could want. You can join us on our Discord. You can find that if you follow us on Twitter at System Mastery, or you can follow me, John, at Gurgle Spasm. We've got plenty of content that we're throwing up there. You can find the link to our Discord. And of course, that's the best way to find out when anything weird happens, if some COVID scares happen or my car gets hit, anything like that. You'll hear it first there. And other than that, though, thank you all for joining us. We will be back in another couple weeks with some more System Mastery, and you all have a good one.